I realized that I was working really hard building something that nobody really wants, at least nobody in my family wants. I want to make sure my legacy is secure through this company.
Welcome to Hitting the Ceiling, the show for entrepreneurs and leaders who refuse to let a ceiling become the end of their story. Derek Volk was 3 weeks away from selling his family business. Not 3 years, not someday, 3 weeks. The company had been in his family since 1967. His grandfather and father started it. Derek took over in 2007 and grew it from about $10 million to roughly $50 million in a 110-person operation. And after decades in the seat, he could finally see the next chapter. Then the buyer walked. Overnight, the future he thought he was stepping into disappeared. But that's not the whole story, because Derek was not just dealing with a failed sale. He was running a family business with no family left inside of it. Derek owned the stock, the debt, the personal guarantees, the silence, and the loneliness that comes with that. So today's conversation is about what happens when the business outgrows the way you've always run it. It's about bad bets, lonely decisions, family identity, and the moment a leader realizes, I can't keep being the operating system anymore. Derek Volk, welcome to Hitting the Ceiling. Your name is on the building. So was your father's, your grandfather's, and now you're the only family member left inside your family business. What does that make you feel? What does that make you think? What does that do to a person?
It's challenging. In fact, a few years ago, I was talking to my father, and this was before my uncle had retired. And I said, you know, when Doug, it's my uncle, I said, when Doug retires, we won't be a family business anymore. And he did not like that. He of course we will. Of course we will. And I said, well, technically, no. I mean, at that point, I'm just a dude who owns a company. And I do have my it's kind of a funny situation, but I have my former sister-in-law, ex-sister-in-law, who's like a sister to me. She works with me, and she's my executive assistant. So I do consider her family, absolutely. And so I do have that family, but I don't have any next generation to run the company. And I'm still trying to figure out what that means. I learned that for sure about maybe a year ago when I sat down with my youngest and she was heading into her senior year or maybe the beginning of her senior year. And I said, you know, do you have any interest in the business? What are your thoughts? And she was very honest with me and said she really didn't. That she said, I see how hard you work and I'm not sure that that's what I want. I want to be a mom, which is beautiful. And I can't certainly fault her for that. And my daughters, I have three daughters and I have a son and three daughters. And my daughters all want to live near each other. And my oldest has settled and built a nice life in Pennsylvania. And so they all want to be near her. And she said, I can't run your business from Pennsylvania, which is true. And so at that point, I realized that I was working really hard building something that nobody really wants, at least nobody in my family wants. And so I start looking at what the other options are, which I've been doing for years as I start to think about it. And I had a feeling that was the direction she was going. So I've been thinking a lot about it because I have a tremendous loyalty to this business. I've basically been in it since birth. It started 2 years before I was born. And I started working here in high school. And the people that work here mean a lot to me. I have personal relationships with them and they work really hard for this company and they care about it and they care about the people that they work with and they care about what they're doing. And that means a lot to me. So I've looked at ESOPs and trusts and partial acquisitions and I'm just weighing all the options right now and trying to figure out what the next best step is for the company and for the people that work here and that have built what I've enjoyed for all these years.
Question around family business. What's the difference, you think, now that you've sort of experienced both, right? You experienced running a company with family members. What do you think is the actual difference? I mean, so many people are like, hey, family business is so hard, so different. I'm not sure that it actually is very different. I mean, it's people, right? And there's some relationship dynamics that maybe make it more difficult, or maybe it doesn't.
I think it can. I think I was very blessed in the family that I got to work with, my father and my uncle. I didn't work a whole lot with my father directly because he started phasing out and retired shortly after I kind of became an active member of the leadership team. But I worked with my uncle for 30 years and that relationship was great. We got along really well. We complimented each other really well. I probably couldn't come up with three times where we had a strong disagreement about anything. I kind of look back later and I realize that we kind of went with the, and I've given this advice to other family businesses, we kind of went with the who cares more policy. So if I went to him with something and I really wanted to do it and I felt passionate about it, then he would go along with it. And if something came up and one of us really didn't want to do it and the other was, I think we should do this, I think we should go this direction, and the other really felt strongly against it, we wouldn't do it. So we went with whoever had the most passion for or against a topic. We let that rule the decision, and I think it worked. And I didn't really realize that until possibly till after he was retired, that that's what made it work so well for so many years. And one of the things that I lost, I think, when he left, that I didn't realize until after he was gone, and I do still have it with my father, but he's not involved in the day-to-day operations, is I have a great team here. I have awesome people. I have people that have been here for 20, 30. I have a woman that's been here 45 years. And they all care about the company. What I had with family that I think you don't necessarily have with anybody else is when I went to Doug with an issue, it was only about what was best for the company. There was no, well, how's this going to affect my workload? How's this going to affect my income? How's this going to affect who I report to or who I don't report to? Or all those different things that, honestly, I don't even know what they are because I've never worked for anybody, so I don't really know. But my guess is,
you assume.
I'm assuming that when I talk to anybody else in the company, those things come into play. I felt like when I talked to my uncle, it was just what's the next best step for the company. And I kind of felt like I lost that when he was gone, when he left. And so he left in 2019, he retired in 2019, and he really stepped back. I don't hardly ever hear from him. I rarely see him. I rarely talk to him. When I do, when he comes in, we have really nice conversations. But he did a nice job disconnecting and retiring and going on and enjoying his life, which is wonderful. I don't have any ill will toward that at all. I think it's great. My father, I think because he's my dad and I see him all the time and I talk to him all the time about personal issues, the work is still something that comes up a lot. We talk a lot about work. We talk more about work now than when he was actively involved, because I think he wants, you know, at 88, he likes to be involved. He likes to hear what's going on with the company. And so I think when Doug retired, when my uncle retired, I think it was after he left that I realized that there was this gap of who can I talk to that is only interested in the company's best interest or even my best interest. And my ex-wife kind of filled that role for a while. And you know, the marriage didn't end up working, unfortunately. But, and I have people in my life, and my sister-in-law is my executive assistant. She's wonderful and my best friend. So I can go to her with just about anything. And I have a woman in my life who's wonderful and I can go to her. But there's something about being involved in the day-to-day, in the daily leadership grind, and the responsibility of, as you said at the beginning, the personal guarantees, the debt, the burden of, and I don't say burden in a horrible sense, like woe is me, but the burden of the responsibility of 110 people's livelihoods, that's hard to explain to someone who doesn't sign the front of a paycheck. It's a different kind of burden that I signed up for. So I'm not complaining. I'm not asking for sympathy, but it is a burden that I take very seriously. The people that work here, that love coming to work here, that love working for my family business, that I know if I sold and when I was selling in 2022, and as you mentioned, it didn't work out, I know that those things would not be the same and I was going to stay on as president. I was going to remain president of the company. I was going to stay actively involved in most of the day-to-day operations, but it was not going to be my company anymore. And I knew that that was going to change things. I've seen it happen with so many customers where, you know, they sell a private equity. Oh no, nothing's going to change. Sure. Of course it is.
Right. And I want to dig in a little bit to, I'll just call it the burden of leadership and the burden of running a company. I don't think most of the world really understands what it's like to be in the pressure cooker 24/7. you what it's like to wait for checks to come in so you can go make payroll because you, in your case, have the 110 people that you're responsible for. Do you find that, do you belong to any peer groups? Do you, like, there's Vistage and EO, Entrepreneurs Organization. There's lots of other groups of entrepreneurs that have been created for simply this purpose, to come and have a conversation with someone who's walked in your shoes. Do you, you participate in any of those types of groups, or do you think it needs to be like in the company? You're a partnership guy that you want someone to be with you in it.
I'm involved in two, actually, and they're great. They're probably two of the best decisions I've made in my career is joining those groups. So I'm involved in a CEO group through the Independent Association of Corrugated Converters. It's a box organization. Okay. So it's independent box companies around the country. And so through this organization called the AICC, the Association of Independent Corrugated Converters, we have groups and they're peer groups. And one of the nice things about our industry is that it's very regional. So, for example, in my CEO group, there's a guy from Pennsylvania, there's a guy from Fort Worth, there's a guy from Salt Lake, there's a guy from St. Louis. We're never going to compete. I'm never going to sell anything in Fort Worth or St. Louis or Salt Lake City, ever. And so we can compete in our market, but not be competitors. And so it allows us to not only meet as people living the same thing that we're living, but we can share information. I can share financial information. I don't have to worry that I'm sharing something very confidential that I'm with a competitor, even a friendly competitor. So that's a great organization. And I joined that in 2007. And that was one of the great decisions of my career. We only meet a couple times a year, but I can shoot an email to them anytime or shoot a text message out and get a bunch of responses. Hey, I'm dealing with this. Anybody going through that? And then I'm involved in an organization called C12, which is a Christian CEO group. And we meet once a month. My group meets in New Hampshire. So I drive down to New Hampshire. It's about an hour. And they're totally outside of my organization. There's a chiropractor. There's a guy who does flooring. There's a financial advisor, real estate. So they're totally not in my business, which gives a whole nother perspective. Sometimes they don't understand what I'm explaining because they're not in manufacturing. So the advice can often be not helpful in the same way that my box CEO group does. But they can also be helpful in other ways, especially some of the psychological, the burden, as we talked about, and the understanding of just what it's like to run a business. Because it's a Christian CEO group, we understand that we can also use our business as a ministry, that we can do more with our business than just selling boxes, that I can actually take my business and I can show what the love of God and what being a disciple of Jesus means in a work environment. And I can do that with 110 people that I kind of have a captive audience with, and they have to listen to me when I talk. I don't sit there and beat them over the head with the Bible, but they all know where I stand and they know that how I'm running the company, and they see that I'm making ethical decisions and decisions that are based on something bigger than just the bottom line. And that the company's vision, which we set when we started with EOS in 2023, we'd never really had a vision before, is a vision that's based on not just making money, that it's based on basically the four core principles. We have our core values, of course, but the core vision of the company is that we want to be a place where people love doing business, a place that thrives financially, that gives back to the community, and that customers love doing business with. And so my 1-year goals, my 3-year goals, my 10-year goals, our goals as a team are all set based on those four things, that we want. People love coming to work here. People love doing business with us. We thrive financially, because if we don't do that, then I can't do the other stuff, and that we give back to the community. That's the vision that drives the goals, the rocks, the everything.
I love the connection to C12. I was a member myself for about a year, a little more than a year, in Philadelphia. And the business as a ministry, the business as a mission, how do you think, you think about the family business, you think about the four pillars that you're building a company on, and then you think about the experience of having someone in your business who's incentivized for that business to win directly, like your father or your uncle. And then you talked a little bit about exploring in ESOP. How do you think that that would change the dynamic? Would you end up with a whole lot of people rowing in the same direction more so than just implementing EOS? Do you think it has a little extra element to it that you think would be positive? What are the pros and cons, and how are you thinking about that?
I feel like our culture that we've created here at Volk Packaging over the last 59 years is a great fit for an ESOP. I looked into an ESOP after the deal fell through, and we're at the point in life where I thought this would be a good fit for the company. And as you mentioned, it fell through because of economic environment that had nothing to do with Volk Packaging. It was an overall economic environment. The private equity company decided that they were going to hold off on all deals for a while, and then it never resurfaced. They've reached out to me, but I went out and decided that if this wasn't going to happen, I was going to either go big or go home. And I went big, and I bought two new machines, and that's where all the debt you mentioned at the beginning comes from. I think that the ESOP is a great option for me because I do struggle with seeing the culture collapse, and knowing that if what would happen. And I care about the people here, and I want them to have a long career here because it's been so good to me. It's been so good to so many people that have spent their lives here. I have 10 people here at the company that have been here for at least half their life. And so that's a big thing. That's a big deal to me. So the challenge I have with an ESOP right now is ESOPs create a lot of debt, and I have a lot of debt. And so I think the bank is going to be like, you know, right now the bank is probably saying, I think you have enough debt for now. If I could figure out a way to do it without adding more debt to the company, I'd probably do it tomorrow. Because I think it's a really a good option for me. And I just want this, I want to do the next right thing. That's what I do. I try to do. I wake up every day and I just try to do whatever seems like what's the right thing to do for today, and try to let tomorrow worry about itself.
I think that, you know, just kind of going into aligning the human energy within an organization. And you mentioned in 2023, you started implementing EOS. I'd love to hear what made you start implementing an operating system, and why'd you choose EOS, and what has been different after that?
About, man, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, my IT guy that ran our IT firm suggested I read Traction. And I started it, and I got to chapter 2, and I thought to myself, there is no way that my uncle and my CFO, who at the time was my uncle, my CFO, were our executive team. My CFO retired also in 2019. So my uncle and my CFO, who had been here 30 years, retired at the same time. So that was a big change for me to lose my uncle and my CFO kind of simultaneously. And I read this, and I thought, there's no way they're going to start this at this point in their careers. It's a lot of work. It's a whole new way of thinking about your business and meetings, and they're not going to do it. So I didn't get past chapter 2. And then I was joined C12, and that was actually in May of 23. And I was telling everybody about my business and my first meeting and kind of going through some of my challenges. And somebody in the group said, have you read Traction? And I said, no. I said, I started it, but I didn't get very far. And he said, well,
you and many others.
Yeah. So he said, you should read it. I think it might be beneficial for you. And I was like, yeah, maybe. And so I was actually, my ex and I were headed to Israel. And so I said, you know what? I got 11 and a half hour, 12 hour flight. I'm going to read this book. And I started reading the book when we took off, and I think I put it down when we landed in Tel Aviv. I read the entire book and probably was annoying the heck out of my wife at the time, and she was trying to get some sleep. But I go, listen to this. And I was so excited because I was like, this is exactly what we need. This is what I'm looking for. I need to figure out if I'm going to spend a lot of my time in Costa Rica, a lot of my time at the lake and be where you are. I can't be running the company. I need to do this. This is what I need to do. And it was perfect. It was exactly what I was looking for. And so I came back and I told everybody, we're going to do this. I think everybody thought it was a flavor of the month and it was going to probably last a couple of weeks. I made everybody read the book. I said, it's not an easy, light read. So take the summer, read the book, Labor Day. After Labor Day, we're going to meet and we're going to have a kickoff meeting. We're going to do this and we're going to stick with it. I'm not even sure I believed that, but I was... I was selling it really well, that this was something we were going to go with and we were going to stay with. And this was going to be how we were going to run the company going forward. This was what was going to give me the opportunity to step back and do what I like to do best and what I do best, which is bigger picture stuff and not be involved in all the day-to-day grind. After 35 years, I was kind of ready for that. And to my shock, everybody read it and was like, yeah, this sounds great. And so we started doing it. We brought in, we brought an implementer to help us get it up and running. And I had an integrator, unfortunately, due to nothing to do with EOS, but a situation where he violated my trust. And I take that very seriously. There was a damage that was unrepairable and I had to let him go. So I had everything going really well where I had like two people off me on the whole org chart. And now it kind of looks like a spider web coming off me, which I'm not crazy about. And I know is not the EOS model, but right now it's working okay for us. And I'm giving it some time before I bring in someone else to either. So he was I had a COO who was my integrator, and he was doing a pretty good job in that role. But he came from a big corporate environment and didn't really, there was some issues. And it was funny. One of the most interesting things I think that has come out of the whole EOS process is when I read that book and I was somewhere over the ocean or Europe or who knows where I was, when I got to the people chapter. And I swear, I literally thought to myself, do I even need to read this? Because I started reading it and it talked about how the leadership team you start with may not be the leadership team you end up with once you implement EOS. And I thought to myself, that may be the case for some people, but not for me, not for my situation. And I read it. I kept reading it because I knew I was supposed to read the whole thing, but I didn't think it really applied. And then last year, I fired my CFO, my COO, and my plant manager in a course of 10 months. And I do not have the same team I started with. So the book was right. But I am confident the right team, the right people in the right seats who get it, want it, and have the capacity to do it. And everybody, our annual EOS meeting that we had in January was, I think, the best meeting that we've ever had. And we had a good quarterly. We have another quarterly set up in July. I'm doing a lot of those meetings myself, but I'm doing a lot of delegating to let the group kind of run most of the meeting. And I kind of lead it, but then sit back. And the feedback I'm getting, we get all nines and tens at that meeting. Everybody felt the meeting went really well. So I don't think we're living the EOS vision the way it's supposed to right now because of the transition of people that I've had. But we're doing well with it. And the team that I have is works really well together. The conflicts are gone. The drama is gone and they're competent at what they do. And so I feel really good about that. So it's been a great journey. And I still struggle with it because I personally hate meetings. So I'm not a big fan of meetings. I don't like meetings. I don't like going to meetings, running meetings, but I see the value in it. So I show up and I do it.
Yeah, that's great. Well, for the record, for those listening, EOS doesn't really have a vision for a company other than you get what it is that you want from your business. And we are giving you all the proven ways that we've seen, and at this point, over 300,000 full-day sessions that we've run directly with an entrepreneurial team, you know, just millions of hours of experience. We kind of know what we call EOS Pure works, which just really means that we've proven this tool over a long period of time that it produces results. But the reality is our goal, our hope, our mission is that you, Derek, just get what it is that you want from your business. And so if you're getting that, mission accomplished. And just to your point, more than, I would say, 80% of the battle is the people, getting the right people in the right seats, who share your core values, who perpetuate your culture forward, who live a life that they love, and they lead people within your business. They lead customers, they lead each other, they lead employees and team members. And if we can get those people engaged, living their ideal life, and helping others do the same. I mean, that's mission accomplished.
They liked the structure. We were growing, we were thriving, but it didn't have the structure. They didn't all know where we were going, what we were trying to do. And, you know, when we first started with EOS, we had never set 10-year goals before, 3-year goals. I don't know if we'd ever set 1-year goals. And so it was a whole new experience for us. And so when we set the goal, we set a goal for a dollar figure. We're going to hit this dollar figure in 10 years. And we had that for, I don't know, a year and a half or so. That was our 10-year goal. And we have these TVs that like flash different things that we put up notices of cookouts and all the different things that we're doing. And we were rotating different EOS things on that. And I literally went to the bathroom. And on the way to the bathroom, I saw our 10-year goal up on the screen. And I'm thinking to myself, that goal sounds awful. Like, I don't want that goal. That's not what I want. That goal means 3 shifts, overtime, buying more machinery. Like, that goal sounds like a nightmare to me. And I came back to my office and I sat here and I thought, what is the goal of this company? And I looked at our vision. I thought about our vision, the 4 things that I mentioned earlier. And I thought, that's the goal. Like, that's, if I have a place where people love coming to work and we make money and we can give back to the community and customers want to continue to buy from me, what else do I want? Why do I want some big number that it's all just about ego that I could hit that number tomorrow. That's what I thought. I came back from the bathroom and I thought, I could hit that number tomorrow. I just go tell the sales reps, just sell anything you can sell. I don't care what the price is. I don't care if we're making money. Just let's hit this number. And we could go out and we could hit that number. We'd be out of business in 6 months.
But when you create a 10-year target that which you have with your 4 points, it involves everyone in the business. And most people will, it doesn't take many calories to say, oh, I love working here. Well, I do love working here and I want to continue to love working here. That all starts to be really present for people and it's motivating and energizing. So kudos to you.
It reminds me what I'm trying to do and what we're trying to accomplish here. And I'm not looking to be the biggest box company in the world. I don't even really want that. That's not what I'm looking to do. And so like one of those mission, part of that vision is, and part of our mission statement. So our mission statement says led by God, run by a family committed to customers, coworkers, and community, making boxes while making a difference. So that's our mission. And with that, I said, okay, well, what are we doing for the community? I mean, we give some money here, we get some money there. We do all that kind of stuff. And I think we do a good job with that. But we're doing something I've wanted to do for a long, long time. In September, we're doing what we call Volt Cares Day, where we're actually shutting the whole plant down and we're going out into the community and we're going to do community work. And so we're going to be working at local daycares and community centers and the Y. And we have a couple of just seniors, that a lady whose brother has Parkinson's. So the brother, she reached out to us because her brother can't get out of the house because he can't get up and down the steps. So we're going to build a ramp for him. So we're going to take the skills that my employees have, and we're going to unleash them onto the community for a day, which I've wanted to do for years, but we've never done because we don't want to take the time. But if we really want to live out our vision, that's part of our vision, is caring for the community. So what better way to do it than to actually go out and do something instead of just throwing some money around? Anybody can just throw money around.
I mean, it's just a good example of how companies can make a big positive dent in their communities and the, you know, wherever they are, they can put a dent in the universe for the good, for sure. With that vision, with that 10-year target, with the 3-year picture that you have for the business, and thinking about the distance between where you are to where you want to go, and the 5 leadership abilities. We talk a lot about on this, it's the name of this podcast for a reason, is that hitting the ceiling, that feeling of being stuck and frustrated, it is inevitable. To the degree that you can master those 5 leadership abilities of simplify, of delegate, of predict, short-term and long-term, of systemize, and of structure, those 5 things, that there's a weakness inevitably if you're hitting the ceiling at the company, departmental, or individual level, where if you can work on those things, it'll unlock you and you'll break through that ceiling. You'll get to the next level. Now, we don't need to go through all 5 of them, but as I talk about that, what are the areas at your company that you think you need to simplify or you need to delegate? Now, you're playing visionary and integrator right now, and maybe that's the next key unlock, or maybe it's something different in terms of that delegation. How are you solving issues at the root so they go away forever with your short-term predicting? And it sounds like you have your long-term predicting 90 days and out pretty locked in. You know, every system is perfectly designed to produce the results it produces. So where are you not getting the results that you want? And where can you go and modify that underlying system in order for you to break through? And then structure, that's the rest of the accountability chart that's driving accountability and clarity that everyone knows who's doing what throughout the business. So where do you see that for your company over the next year or so, where you're going to have to really dig in and master some of those leadership abilities?
Those are all key, of course. Right now, the delegation is where I need to, as a leader, I need to start trying to figure out what I'm going to do with delegating, because I want to make sure that structure is there. I don't have a great, for lack of a better word, death plan. I have a death plan, which is, I know, very morbid sounding. I'm a licensed skydiver, so at one point I called it the parachute doesn't open. I need to continue to work on the delegation and the systemization of the company so that, number one, I have a long-term plan. And right now, as I mentioned earlier, I bought a couple of new machines. They were very expensive. They put a tremendous amount of debt on the company, and we're kind of digging our way out of that. And that's going to take some time, and the economy is not exactly booming right now. So we're just trying to kind of keep our nose above the water with that. And that's challenging. It's a challenging business because it's very capital intensive. I'm competing against billion-dollar companies who have unlimited, seemingly unlimited resources. It's a challenging business to be in to begin with. And then you throw on a lot of debt, and we have to make a lot of money just to show, you know, a financial statement that doesn't have parentheses at the bottom, which I don't like seeing, obviously.
No, nobody does.
My goal, and what I'm thinking about and spending a lot of time on, is what systems do we have to put in place so that there's a plan if people know what they have to do, there are systems in place, they understand their roles, and they can work together as a team. So I don't have to be here for every decision. I don't want to have to be here for every decision at this point in my life. I want to, and I don't feel like I need to be. I'm very pleased with the company, with the people I have here. But I also feel that I can't be out too much, because there's still a lot of, at the end of the day, a lot of decisions that I need to make. And I would like to get to the point where I'm as irrelevant as possible. I mean, that's what I was saying a few years ago. My goal is to become as irrelevant as possible at this company and be overhead. I want my line in the financial statement to be looked at as overhead, and that I need to continue to work on creating systems and keeping the team feeling like they can make decisions without me. Yesterday I was on the road calling on customers, which I love to do, and I don't do enough. And I thought about calling in and doing the L10 virtually. We do our L10s on Tuesdays. And I was like, you know what? No, I'm out doing a thing. I'm doing my thing. If I take an hour and a half and I sit in on an L10, that's an hour and a half I'm not in front of a customer. And there aren't a lot of things that only I can do. Like I can delegate a lot of things. What I can't delegate is being the guy whose name is on the building, the guy whose name is on the bottom of every box, and walk into a customer and say, I care about your business. And I wasn't trying to sell them anything. I let the sales reps deal with all that. I wasn't getting samples or asking them about new projects. My goal is to just go in and thank them for their business. I'm the owner of the company. I came out today just to thank you for your business. And only I can do that as the owner of the company. And so I didn't go to the L10, and they worked on inventory and some other things that I had put out, said, hey, we need to continue to work on these things, do some issue solving around these issues. And they did. And I'm sure the meeting went well. Everybody gave it an 8. So I don't know if that was.
It's because you didn't show up.
Because I didn't show up. It was 8s down the line. But that's good. I shouldn't have to be at the L10s. And it's hard to not be. As a visionary, I don't want to be at the L10s, but as the interim integrator, I kind of need to be at the L10s. So trying to kind of figure out my role there. But of the 5 leadership issues that you brought up that are so key right now, my effort is on the delegation part and getting what I do to the other people in the company so that if I get hit by a bus tomorrow and my 4 children suddenly own this company, but have no interest in running it, that it can run itself. that the company can run itself and the kids can own a quarter each, and but they can go on and do what they do and live their lives, and they don't have to come up to Maine to run a box company, which none of them want to do. So I want to make sure that my legacy is secure through this company. That means a lot to me, maybe too much. I work with my therapist on that part, but you know, my legacy here does mean something to me. And what I've done with my life, you know, it does matter to me. And so I'm just trying to figure out how to make that last after there's no more me.
Appreciate you coming on to Hitting the Ceiling. And before we go, just like I ask every guest, what's the one piece of advice you would give to other entrepreneurs who maybe are in a similar situation than you have been in the past? What's that one thing that, man, if they could just get that right and learn the lesson that you had to learn the hard way, what would that be?
I think create a vision. Know what your vision is for your company. If it's to make a pile of money, okay, fine. That's your vision. Whatever your vision is, make sure you know what it is, because otherwise you have no idea how you're leading everybody else. And then they don't know what they're doing, and it just ripples right down the line. So having a vision of what you're trying to do at the end of the day is really important.
If this conversation gave you something to think about, I'd love to keep that going. I write a newsletter called Clarity Break Thoughts, where I share simple ideas, questions, and reminders to help you step back, think clearly, and lead with more intention. You can subscribe at eosworldwide.com/claritybreakthoughts. Again, that's eosworldwide.com/claritybreakthoughts.